panel. Is my mic on? I can't hear myself. There we go. Okay. Good morning. Welcome to the Roundtable Panel. I'm Joe Donahue. I couldn't hear myself in my head, and that was because my mic wasn't on. There we go. Well, good morning. Welcome to our panel discussion. And it's been a weekend, so we have a lot to talk about. We have 2.5 days worth of stuff to catch up on, and we'll do that in just a moment. Let me introduce the panel. Before I do that, I'll remind you that you can join us by going to Roundtable@WAMC.org. Roundtable@WAMC.org. WAMC's Alan Chartok is here. Good morning, Alan.
Good morning, Big Joe.
Good morning. And how you holding up there, buddy?
I'm recovering.
Good.
I'm recovering fun driver.
Yes. All right, yours isn't on either.
Oh.
There you go. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah. All right, so mazel tov for getting it done so early.
Well, thank you, and you're sitting next to the guy, Big Joe, who has so much to do with it.
Yeah, look, we all put in our time and do our thing, right?
Yep.
And it's and everybody was lovely and came together and made it happen. And I don't know. I think I'm speaking for the entire staff when I say, well, thank God. We got a weekend.
Right.
Libby Post is here, political consultant and our dear friend. Thank you very much. Good to have you with us. And Teresa Bourgeois joins us. She is a communications consultant. Was with us on our Thursday edition of the Roundtable, the post-debate special, and it's lovely to have you back as well. Thank
Delighted
you very much.
Delighted to be back. Thanks, and congratulations on
Well,
the fun day.
Thank you very much. Yeah, we were just about inches done before you when we last spoke, so very nice to have you. And WAMC's Alan Chartok, of course. I think I introduced you properly, but did I? Yes, I did.
Whatever.
Okay.
Oh, just don't call him late for dinner.
That's right.
That's all right.
All right. So here are just some of the stories that we'll be talking about. We'll start off with our political conversation this morning and talk about Hillary Clinton pressing the advantage that she seems to have in most of the states. There are a variety of polls out there. I must say, I don't want to really get too much into polling this morning because we've talked about it at great length before, but there are polls that show Hillary Clinton ahead by 12 points.
Mm-hmm.
There are national polls that show her ahead by 5 points. There are polls that show Donald Trump ahead by 2 points.
I've always found the Rasmussen poll and to be highly suspect.
Oh, it is so Republican. It's
a bit of an outlier.
Funny. Yeah, that's
with the emphasis on liar.
Right.
So it is safe to say that the polls are all over the place. But with that said, there does seem to be, when you look at a consensus, a widening race, and that Hillary Clinton is pulling away. And we also see that in most of the battleground states, with the exception, I guess, of Ohio. So, Hillary Clinton moved aggressively on Sunday to press her advantage in the presidential race, urging black voters in North Carolina to vote early and punish Republican office holders for supporting Donald Trump, even as Mr. Trump's party increasingly concedes he is unlikely to recover in the polls. Aiming to turn her edge over Mr. Trump into an unbreakable lead, Mrs. Clinton has been pleading with core Democratic constituencies to get out and vote in states where balloting has already begun. By running up a lead well in advance of the November 8th election in states like North Carolina and Florida, she could virtually eliminate Mr. Trump's ability to make a late comeback.
Hmm. Well, a couple of things, Joe. I was very interested in the North Carolina appearance, where she surrounded herself with the mothers of the teenagers and others who had been shot by cops. Now, that has a dangerous aspect to it because, you know, you might get the other guys on the other side, the police at any cost, the police. We know that Trump has said that. But in terms of black turnout, it really is a strategic decision. You know, our Teresa Bourgeois, who is here with us, I just learned something about her that I hadn't known, and that is that when she worked in the Senate, she worked on the Senate elections. She worked with Tom Daschle?
Right. I worked in the Senate. He was a minority leader, majority leader in the Senate, and working on message operation in the Senate.
And you did that. You were responsible for, you were in charge of that.
Of the messaging operation in the U.S. Senate.
Wow.
Not on the election side, but on the governing side.
Yeah. Well, that's amazing.
Radio, TV.
It's amazing. So anyway, I think that overconfidence can kill the Hillary people, and they know it. because their voters are much more marginal than Republican voters. They are.
Well, I think that's why you have Karl Rove saying, oh, it's over, because they want to dampen down the, as much as possible, the Democratic vote. I mean, now the only poll that matters now is voting. I mean, people have to vote.
It's absolutely true.
People have to vote.
And I don't think anybody in the Democratic Party is being complacent at all. They know that this could turn on a dime. I mean, it looks great when you have a double-digit lead, but we all have to work very hard to make sure to turn out the vote, because that's what it's going to be about. And it's about the ground game, which is what I've been saying. He doesn't really have one. She does. And when you have the ground game and you can turn your people out to vote, you're in a much better position.
And yet, how many times have we all watched CNN during election nights and seen an unexpected thing happen where, you know, I say, look at, one of those guys says, look at this. And all of a sudden, you know, a Democratic or Republican who wasn't supposed to win wins. That's with all the polling and all the other stuff. So you never know.
2 weeks is an eternity in an election, really. Two weeks is an eternity.
I know, it's way too long.
Right. And you know, early voting can change some of that, but they're doing early voting too. But I think, you know, broadly, what's interesting is at the same time that...
Sorry, I believe the word is bigly. Go ahead.
Bigly.
Right.
To the larger question, though, that you raised, Joe, I think that while Secretary Clinton is pulling the Democratic Party together, you know, clearly Trump is tearing the Republican Party apart. But I think, you know, so much of the focus has been about all the things, and rightly so, Trump's behavior and his language, his actions and such. But I think getting lost in all of that is what an amazing job Clinton is doing in this campaign. I mean, she really, if you look over the length of the campaign about, you know, she made it through the primaries, has pulled the Sanders people back together, you know, a fantastic convention. And then, you know, she was a force at the three debates. And I think
she has the president of the United States going around in a way that is...
And the first lady.
I mean, Kellyanne Conway was complaining on, I think she was on Meet the Press. She was complaining, well, she's got the president and the former president and this one. And that was like, well, that's politics, honey. Right. You've been in this game for a long time.
And
give
what,
me a break.
When the Bushes were running, they
that's
didn't
right, they didn't?
Well, and you don't, and they have been unable to get any former presidents on the Republican side to side with them. And I mean, this sounds like a joke, but it really is true that, you know, they're left with Scott Baio and
Chachi.
Right.
And that's about it.
And some wrestler, I think.
Yes.
Well, North Carolina is interesting, too, in that even the Republican governor is having trouble there in his election because of Trump, because Trump's going into North Carolina and talking down the economy to try to drive up, you know, his vote. And the governor is trying to run, the Republican governor is trying to run on the notion that he has built a strong economy.
Yeah, but North Carolina? But the thing is, he was behind the eight ball as soon as he let that bill go through, and he pushed the bill, the bathroom bill is what we call it now. And his attorney general, who's running against him, who's a Democrat, was like, I'm not going to enforce this. This is insane. And so McCrory is really in trouble because people are seeing the economic impact of that bill has been tremendous. So he can talk all he wants about building the economy, but basketball is pulling out playoffs. Everybody's doing this, and nobody's wanting to go to North Carolina.
I like North Carolina.
It's
in fact,
beautiful.
I was down there in Nashville visiting with Mary Grant.
Asheville. Oh, okay.
Yeah, Asheville. So the most beautiful place you'll ever want to see, Blue Ridge Mountains and all of the rest of this stuff. It's really too bad because, you know, there's some very good people in North Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things, Teresa, you were mentioning about when you look at the polls and where we are, and of course, 2 weeks can be an eternity. The thing, and I heard this over the weekend still, Kellyanne Conway being one, but there are several other surrogates for Donald Trump were on the Sunday shows and keep on saying that, well, we're expecting him to pivot now to make his argument mode of why you should vote for me over Hillary Clinton. With all due respect, haven't they been waiting for him to pivot since March? and that has not happened. So then on... correct me. We're at Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, on Saturday,
and this is the
address that's supposed to be the beginning of what they're calling the argument. So this is why you should vote for me over Hillary Clinton. So he gets two paragraphs into it, and then immediately goes off on how he's going to sue the women who accused him and how
very Trump-like.
Right. And so that to your point about yes, 2 weeks is an eternity, but he is the gift that keeps on giving in that regard, because
is.
You cannot expect in the next 14 days that he's going to just like completely become another person.
I want to give the paranoid view of why Kellyanne Conway is saying we're behind, and the others are saying we're behind, because that will potentially hold down the Democratic vote.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right.
And so one wonders whether that isn't what they're up to, which is to say, oh, well, you know, people who have to turn over hamburgers and do other things and, you know, make a real sacrifice to get out and vote. And that's why they're really pushing early voting.
And absolutely.
Karl Rove came out on Fox saying that, oh, yeah, I think that they're behind. I do think it's a strategy on their part.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, I think it's a... You know, that's
it's a Hail Mary.
A Hail Mary. They don't have much left. But let's get back to this Gettysburg. I found that so offensive. I think Trump needs to read the Gettysburg Address, right? You know, all men are created equal, right? You know, it just for him to go to Gettysburg, let's put aside how he stepped on his own message. Or would he the other thing I wonder is, would he rather talk about the women issue because he thinks that those numbers are baked mm-hmm. in, rather than talk about his foundation, rather than talk about his taxes? Because, you know, we've stopped talking about his taxes. What is in his taxes that he is so afraid of? And, you know, I still worry about what's in his taxes.
He's on Putin's payroll.
He's not going away. Donald Trump is not going away. And I think the foundation for him is a litigation risk. And who knows what's in his taxes and what other risks that raises for him.
But am I right in saying that if he loses, and as you say, he's not going away, he'll be present on the stage. But if we don't see those taxes by November 8th,
never going to see them. And there's something in them that mm-hmm. we should all be worried about, because he's not going away. And look at what happened debate night. You know, they had that Facebook streaming live event. They raised $9 million. They had a half hour before, then the debate, and then 90 minutes after. And that time in the constituency that he has garnered, they were able to raise $9 million. He has a powerful force, and I think one of the challenges for the Democrats is there are a whole group of economically disaffected voters that
sure.
go to his rally.
That's right.
And the Democrats have to figure out how to bring them back home and bring them back
mm-hmm.
in.
Right.
And they have it, unlike with Romney, the Democrats separated Romney from those economically disaffected voters. Well, he did it himself with his comments. But they have not, over economic issues, the Democrats have some work to do even after the election in making it clear that he is not on their side, that Breitbart policies and his policies are not on their side.
And, of course, we all watched, if you haven't yet, you must watch Alec Baldwin on Saturday
God.
Night Live. It's all over.
You stayed up?
Well, the greatest thing about him is he took a shot at Hillary. They took a shot at Hillary there, in which they said, do you want to vote for Trump or do you want to vote for the Republican?
Yeah, right.
And I love that, because that's what Hillary's got to worry about. You know, once she wins, with Obama doing everything he can for her and all of that, it'll be interesting to see whether she pays back.
And governing, you know, I mean, how mm-hmm. the challenge is going to be how to govern, because the Senate goes Democrat, which would be terrific, not clear,
mm-hmm.
But the House is going to be harder right, just by the nature of what's going to happen in these elections. And so how do you govern?
Yeah, but how much further right can they go? And if they do that and refuse to do things, continue the gridlock, they will be the reason for the gridlock. If the Dems take the Senate, even if it's just for the 2 years, because 2018 is going to be a nightmare, and she's in the White House, and they're the ones who end up, you know, being
Libby,
the,
they always the, say that.
Yeah, but look what happened to Gingrich in the, you know, in the contract on America.
Yeah, sure.
You know, I mean, they With took losses. Way. Well,
yeah.
no, it was a contract on America.
It was.
They took losses, you know, in the following election. So I don't know how much more to the right and much more obstructionist they will be, because it's hurting their brand. But also, the Republicans are going to be in total disarray. Somebody needs to come out as a leader.
Well, I keep hearing, by the way, that they're going to impeach her. For anything they want to make up, including, you know, failure to answer Congress in a respectful way, whatever they want to make up. So that would go counter to what you're suggesting, that they may come over further towards the middle.
Well, we'll see what happens. If they want to maintain any kind of relevance and be able to build a party back again, they have to govern. And so if they're going to pull the same thing they did with Obama, we're trying to be obstructionist every step of the way, it has not done well for them.
As the old saying goes, from your mouth to God's ear,
yes.
I just don't believe it.
Okay. Well, we'll see what happens.
I think the problem is that this group that's in there now, and the Republicans in the House, Newt Gingrich planted the seeds for this, and they're the never compromise people.
Mm-hmm.
And they believe that they cannot and should not compromise.
Exactly.
And the public, it all, you know, it gets lost out there and the implications of that. But when you have these never compromise people, then they can't fight on policy. So what they've done is try to criminalize the governing process.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what you've seen over the last 10 years, the criminalization. You know, when you're not doing the typical debating over public policy issues, you're trying to criminalize policy differences.
We were talking the other day about antisocial personality disorder,
mm-hmm.
and I think we all agreed that, you know, if we're not psychiatrists and we're not, you know, people who know about that stuff. So somebody sent me a definition, personality disorder, what is it, health, intellihealth.com, content reviewed by Harvard Medical School. Let's just assume it's so. And just one paragraph that I'm going to read you, without any comment. Antisocial personality disorder is characterized by failure to conform to society's norms, deceit or intimidation in relationships, and a failure to show consideration for the rights of others. People with this type of personality sometimes have a history of criminal activity with an absence of remorse for their hurtful deeds. They can be impulsive, reckless, and sometimes violent. This disorder is far more common and more serious in men than women. No comment. Just wanted to read it to you.
Thank you. You did a lovely reading, by the way.
Teresa, when you look at where we are right now in these last few days of 14 days of campaigning left, where do you think, especially given the article that I read at the beginning of Hillary working and working hard for not only early voting but also with working with the president down ballot, of how successful that can be over 2 weeks?
I mean, in terms of what Senate races to pick
yes.
up, is that what you're asking?
Yes.
Yeah. I think that things look very good in New Hampshire. And with the Kelly Ayotte Hassan race, right?
Mm-hmm.
It looks like Hassan will.
I would go as far as to say very good.
Okay, good.
It's promising.
Again,
very
promising. More encouraging.
And it depends if you're a Republican or Democrat.
I'm sorry. I'm a Democrat.
Oh, yeah.
Really? We had no.
Shocking.
Shocking.
I can't imagine why we're all here. But
right. No, I think that things are. It's. The potential to pick up the Senate is growing stronger every day. And I think you see that in the directions where they're sending the surrogates, whether it's, you know, Biden is going to be back in Pennsylvania this week. You're going to have you have people in Arizona. You have people in Nevada. You have
right.
people in Florida. And I think that it's looking good.
We'll pause there. We will take a break. We'll come back, and we have a lot of letters to get to. Alan is getting them ready as we speak. We'll be back right after this short break. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok, Teresa Bourgeois, and Libby Post making up the panel. I'm Joe Donahue, and we welcome your letters, roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. And let's go to letters.
Okay. John very perceptively puts in the subject line, Alan is right, which makes me want to read it. If Hillary,
sure to get your letter read if you didn't.
Yeah, right. smart
that's
man.
That's the only way to get your letter read. Yeah.
If Hillary wins, Congress will go after her with every flimsy excuse and Breitbart-generated lie that they can find. Let's not kid ourselves. The pro-fascist wing that support Trump also has its representatives, if not tacit supporters and enablers in Congress, and they're not going away either.
That's why they have to fight so hard to win the Senate, why the Democrats are fighting so hard to win the Senate.
So can I ask a question of do you see this right now there is a chasm between that alt-right and the quote-unquote Republican establishment. So is that going to come together? Is that going to coalesce, do you think, once the common enemy then becomes Hillary Clinton, if she wins?
Well, all I can say is...
Or there will always be a risk.
I keep seeing the rock in the hard place. That's where these guys all are right now. There is no way out for them. Certainly not electorally, there isn't. And when they get back in, they're going to put some spittle on their finger, and they're going to hold it up in the wind and say, what is best for me? So if Libby is right... they'll say what's best for me is to be seen as more mainstream. And if I'm right, they're going to have to make up a lot of distance that has been generated by the Trump candidacy, you know, and then say, okay, I really was for him and you can't hold it against me. You can't hold it against me forever. Could be either way.
I mean, I think Boehner left as Speaker of the House because he realized that the House was ungovernable. He could not hold together the Republican caucus.
Mm-hmm. I think he left because they kicked him out, basically.
Right. But he couldn't hold together the caucus, right? He couldn't knit together.
Right.
And Ryan can barely hold together the caucus.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what he's able to do.
And the question is, if he wants to actually govern, they want to be obstructionist. If he actually wants to govern, then how is he going to do that? Well, he's going to have to join with Pelosi, you know, to govern. And the question is, how will that happen? Is that even possible? I think it's a tricky question. And how over time does this work itself out? Because at some point, the Republicans have to get back to governing.
More letters.
Well, Catherine jumps right in on this very discussion. She says, ability to govern. I've wondered whether there are Republicans who Hillary could appoint to cabinet or other leadership positions who would assist in building bridges in Congress so that work gets done. And that's from Catherine in Northampton. The answer, I think, to your question is they always do that. They always appoint a Republican to
one or two, right?
And then they're immediately dismissed as being.
Well, President Obama tried it in his team of rivals approach, and it pretty much failed, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because as soon as that happens, they're seen as basically bad people, turncoats by the Republicans. And but certainly it couldn't hurt to do it. Okay, so then. Peter says in New Paltz, ungovernable. It looks like the purpose of a political party is now to bring down the other party rather than accomplish anything, so the country has become ungovernable. The Republicans would see any meaningful legislation as an accomplishment for President Hillary Clinton, and they will not let that happen, just like it is now with Obama. But it will be worse.
Right. That's why it's so important for the Democrats to win the Senate, so at least... you can build at least if they win in the Senate, at least she gets her nominees through. And as you saw, what did President Obama do? He started doing whatever he could do through executive order because he couldn't get anything through.
Well, but I also thought you were gonna say that he's out there and he's campaigning for Congress.
Absolutely.
And he's campaigning extraordinarily for state legislators.
Yes.
Because it's the state legislators who gerrymandered all of these elections.
Now, I mean, when you want to talk about rigging the elections, it's all about gerrymandering.
Right. And we do know where this is all going to go, because in 2 years, there's going to be something like 26 Democratic seats that have to be defended and like 5 Republican seats.
Yeah.
So whatever business Hillary gets done, she better get done in those first two years,
right, including the Supreme Court. But that's why there's some really important races here in New York. I think that this Faso race against Zephyr Teachout, those are the kind of critical races around the country, just like that, where...
He's got a great new ad out. Did you see the new ad with his wife turning Faso with the thermostat? It's like, it really humanizes John in a way that I think people... it's a funny commercial, it's a cute commercial, and it makes him seem more of a nice guy.
That's lovely, but where does he stand on Donald Trump?
Oh, I get that. I know. I'm talking about,
I agree with you absolutely that he's trying to change the subject.
Yeah, he's trying to change the subject.
And he's doing it in a nice way, but the bottom line is, where does he stand on Donald Trump?
I was astounded during the fund drive to see John Faso, who I've known for 1,000 years, giving us some money, which is brilliant as opposed to stupid. You know, I mean, forget about me or the fund drive or anything else. It's just a brilliant move.
Yeah.
It just ingratiates him to our audience, which is the audience he needs.
That's right. It's going to be a very close race, I think.
Oh, yeah.
I can't figure out who's going to win on that.
Well, I know one thing. Whoever wins could be a very potent force in New York State.
Yes, exactly.
Yes.
And in fact, I wouldn't be surprised. Both of them have run for governor.
Right.
And I wouldn't be one bit surprised to see either of them.
Try again.
Or both of them running, seeing each other like the Lincoln-Douglas debate.
Yeah.
You know, in a future election.
All right. A few more letters and then we'll take a break.
Okay. So Eric says, a theme for the 2006 fund drive a decade ago in reference to the Iraq fiasco was Pete Seeger's Bring Them Home. As we know, HRC voted in favor of that intervention, so she shares responsibility for the disaster. Obama gave us a break from that kind of thing, but does the panel have any thoughts regarding the dangers we will again face in a Clinton administration, or what Ross Douat in his Sunday op-ed piece called The Establishment Type of Folly? And that's from Eric. Well, you know, that's the issue. That's why a lot of people don't like her.
Because she's seen as being part of the establishment.
Yeah,
and how else can she be seen? Look, she was, you know, the first lady of a state, the first lady of a country. She changed the way first ladies operate in terms of being, you know, so incredibly involved in policy. Yeah, she's an insider. But you know what? That's who runs for office. And Donald Trump could be seen as an outsider all he wants. But when it comes to money and when it comes to power and the ability to get the banks to bail him out, he's an insider. Let's be real.
She's going to win because it's him.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's why she's going to win. Yeah. If she wins, it will be because she's running against Trump. If it had been any of the more moderate Republicans, she could really be in trouble.
If it was John Kasich, it would have been a real problem for her. Yeah. You know, even Ted Cruz might have been problematic.
Which is why I think they sort of held back on beating him up too much in the second debate.
See, I think
beating
she's...
Beating up Trump.
Trump.
So in other words, Hillary had this massive victory in the first one.
Yeah.
She comes on the second one. I'm saying, give him this, give him that. And like, I'm in a fight. She doesn't do it because at the time, you have to remember, everybody was talking about his getting out of the election. And that's the last thing they want.
That's what they want. But he acted like such a thug and such a predator at that debate.
One of the things I just heard this morning, I don't know if it's true or not, but he said he was talking to a crowd and saying, and she was walking around behind me.
Yeah, right.
That's a riot.
Well, that's his M.O., right? He turns all of that stuff around. I mean, people were saying he was on cocaine, so then he's going to say she should take a drug test.
Right. It's all projection. So it's a lot of projection.
Which goes back to, you know, what Tony Schwartz, a co-author of Art of the Deal, said months ago about that's what he does.
Yeah, I saw him yesterday on something. On MSNBC, he was on some, I think, Morning Joe or Joy in the AM Joy or something like that, and Joy Reid, and he was just going on about what a psychopath Trump is, basically.
Yeah. Let's take a break. We'll come back and we will continue. We'll talk a little bit more about the Senate and those races, and then we will we'll dive into that and take more of your letters too. Roundtable at WAMC.org, roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll continue right after this short break.
Thank you.
Good morning and welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok, Teresa Bourgeois, and Libby Post, all checking their devices and ready to go. So I just want to talk a little bit more before we move on to other non-political topics, and that is because we've mentioned it a few times this morning in regards to the Senate race and the Democratic, the possibility of a Democratic Senate. And this idea, there is an article in the New York Times this morning, and I think both of Libby and Teresa have talked about it. If we're being honest, the presidential race between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump is effectively over. This is Chris. Chris Caliza. Between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump is effectively over, which means that the big fight over the next 15 days is control of the Senate, where Democrats need a net gain of 4 seats to retake control. That prospect is looking more and more likely of late, thanks in part to Trump's collapse at the top of the ticket, a fall that appears to be dragging down the likes of Richard Burr and Kelly Ott and Joseph Heck in Nevada. What few people talk about but should is that this could be a very short-lived majority for Senate Democrats, as the 2018 field is remarkably bad for them. The numbers for that year are stunning. 25 or 25 Democratic-affiliated independents are up for re-election compared with just 8 Republicans. That's as lopsided an election cycle as you will ever see.
I believe I deserve a little bit of credit for having just mentioned that very thing, and that in 2 years, whatever they want to do.
Actually, we'll give you full credit.
All the credit in the world, yes, whatever you'd like.
Yes, we'll give you full credit.
Whatever they do, Joe, they've got to do it now. They've got to do it in the next 2 years, because after that, the Senate will probably revert, although you don't know. Even with all of those seats, it is pretty lopsided, and the chances are some Democrats will get defeated, and that would be the end of that.
So my first reaction is, OMG, can we get through this election first before we start talking about the next
one?
When I read that article. Yeah. But no, we can't. But it does show how important it is. Well, it was important before, to win these key Senate races, because of just what you said, Alan. I mean, it's critically important that the Clinton administration be able to get their people in place. And also, you know, the Supreme Court. Changes in the Supreme Court as soon as possible. So everything that might happen is probably in the first 2 years.
I did not fully understand the idea. I mean, I got the math part of it, but as far as the actual states, but we're talking about states, Indiana, Missouri, Montana, North Dakota, and West Virginia. These are states, obviously, that Mitt Romney won in 2012, and most likely Donald Trump will win this year.
So, Indiana's razor thin now.
Yes.
So West Virginia, yes. Some of the more, I mean, he'll get the Bible Belt, but Indiana, if Indiana goes for Hillary with Mike Pence on that ticket, he's toast when he goes back as governor. It's going to be really
interesting. And I'm okay with that.
Me too. I mean, I think he's more dangerous. The problem with Donald Trump being elected is Mike Pence would be running the country, and he's much more dangerous than Trump is.
By the way, I'm not so sure you're right about that.
I think
Trump is so convinced of his own infallibility and everything else that he will just snap his fingers and go whichever way his whatever mind wants him to go. I don't think you could count on Pence running the country any more than when Ike and Richard Nixon, being my example, you know, a lot of people thought that Richard Nixon was put in there just to be the political person and to handle all the decisions and the rest of it. But, you know, Ike proved to be a much more formidable force than a lot of people thought.
Back to the Senate question, too. I think there are, though, not in the states you named, but in others, there are really demographic shifts that are going to change things. You got Arizona, Nevada, Georgia. You're seeing some states, you know, maybe even Texas, though a little early, maybe next
week. Well, Texas this morning, the national polls came out, 3 points for Trump. Right. 3 points up. But that's in the margin of error.
But over time, because of demographic shifts, I think you're going to see some of those
particularly
states
in the
change.
South.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And it all depends on, does the Democratic Party come together in a broader, more cohesive party? And again, does the Republican Party continue to tear itself apart? Do they break into two parties? I don't think so. But how do they, you know, it's a fascinating question of how they'll come back together. And we all need to be worried about that, because it gets to the fundamental question of governing. Mm. And unless they come back together in some way, it's an ungovernable situation, and that hurts all of us.
Did anyone see the 60 Minutes piece last night on Ohio?
Yes. Yes.
What would your takeaway on it? There was Scott Pelley talking to a lot of undecided and decided voters as to Ohio, and basically the premise of the piece being here is a state that has basically predicted the winner of the presidential contest since 1950
Well, you know, I thought the women were very clear. The one woman who was like, I don't like her, but I can't vote for him. So, yeah, I'm going to vote for her. You know, I think he miscalculated the women's vote nationally. And I don't think he cares. I don't think he thinks women are that important. I think, you know, I think he hates women. I think he's a misogynist. And so, you know, I think he miscalculated the women's vote. I think he thought that, you know, just like Melania, they're going to do whatever I say. But it was an interesting segment where these people, some of them were saying, I'm still with him. Some of them saying, I'm a Republican, but I can't vote for him. And I think we're going to see more and more of that over the next 2 weeks. You know, when...
What I got out of it is because it's been a joke for the last couple of weeks/months of what an undecided voter is. You know, like, come on, you know, how could you be undecided? But I think in that piece, they really showed the kind of gymnastics that are going on in many people's minds, especially in these states, as to
and it's, if for
which
people,
candidate they think is the
for
best
people
candidate.
Like us thinking, oh my God, how can there be any undecided voters anymore?
Yeah. Well,
this campaign's been going since January of 2015. It's enough already.
Let me read you a letter we got here today, entitled "Jill Stein from Christopher Robin." I've heard that Jill Stein has 17% and is growing.
Yeah, yeah.
Yet I hear nothing of this in the media.
Yeah, there's a
By
reason
sticking
for that.
It to Clinton and Trump and brushing off the other candidates, does that mean the media just wants to be on the side that's winning? Positively 4th Street, Bob Dylan. Wait a second now. I've been reading those polls assiduously, at least twice a day. I have seen that the Libertarian candidate has a shot at getting some more votes. But I haven't seen anything from Jill Stein approaching more than a couple of percentage points.
I'm looking now at this at all of the polls here, and I agree with you. I have not seen anything where she breaks 5%. If that's happening, I don't know that it's necessarily a
true statement.
Well, a true statement, or that it's that's something that the media is suppressing. From the latest polls I see, I don't think she's polling much. The number that I'm seeing is 4%.
And I also think the equation has changed over the last few weeks as it's become more and more clear that
which we knew it would happen.
Trump is really challenging the fundamentals of our democracy. And I think that it becomes more clear you're either for him or against him, and the race is really between those two. And a protest vote becomes a lot more expensive because, you know, I think in my view, the disinfectant for this is to vote against him and to send a really clear, strong message. And I think as he raises, you know, as he attacks some basic fundamental rights in this country, it gets a little more serious for people.
Hmm.
When it is to the letter writer's point, to the point, which is that in a lot of these polls, Jill Stein isn't even included.
Right.
Gary Johnson is in some cases, if he's above 10% at a certain time, but otherwise they're not included in those polls.
Now the candidate that is interesting is in Utah. McMullen,
mm-hmm.
Because he is pulling enough votes away from Trump that's a real contest in Utah. And I think if Trump loses Utah, and also it's one of the states where the Electoral College, it's not a winner take all. So he could get a few electoral votes there. And I think in terms of a third party candidate, he's the interesting one to watch.
Alan, let's do some more letters.
All right. Some people have been writing long, long letters, and they don't get read. Surprise. Okay, so Ted says, we go on endlessly about how untrustworthy she is. Well, fact checkers rank her as the second most honest, prominent politician of the country.
Thank you very much.
And her opponent as by far the least. We say that she has trouble with transparency while her opponent refuses to release his taxes and the current administration sets records for secrecy. We decry her ties to corporations and the financial industry while supporting a walking tax shelter or mourning the exit of a president whose reelection was funded by a record-shattering Wall Street haul. Well, I agree with some of that.
I agree with that letter. I think she's winning not just because he's losing, but I think that she has shown a tremendous talent and, you know, outlined some good ideas. Here's a
very important letter from Bernie. Dear panel, seems to me that you're all talking as though Hillary had already won. Hey,
no,
Bernie, have
no.
you been listening? Because I made it clear that this was a strategy, I thought, to show that they were losing, the Republicans were losing, so that people would stay home. Okay, all right. Don't worry, Bernie. Dear panel, it seems to me you're talking as though Hillary has already won. That worries me. Why should I go out and vote? She's already won. I'm staying home. Bernie from Woodburn. Now, I don't mean if he says I'm staying home means he is staying home or whether it means that that's what people are thinking.
I think he would have stayed home anyway.
I think voting is so important this year. It's not, you know, the only poll that matters is when people go to the polls and vote. That's the only poll that matters.
Well, I also think that it's under those polls that and that address that of suppressing or dampening down the vote of Democrats sort of forgets and does not keep into take into account how many on the left are very scared.
Sure. Well, that's a very good point. It's a very good point.
You mean about her?
No, about him.
Oh, about him, right.
One of the most scary
they should be scared.
You know, frightened. Okay. By the way, just real quick, yeah. I just want to clarify this because I just looked up the latest. So the latest national poll that came out was a Quinnipiac University poll that included Jill Stein. And it was 47% for Hillary Clinton, 40% for Donald Trump, 7% for Gary Johnson, 1% for Jill Stein. So that's the latest poll where all candidates were included. And I just wanted to
I've heard
we get 15%. I don't know.
I've heard that. Your friend from upstairs came down and says, you know, I mean, I've heard that. So I knew that that wasn't so. Okay. So William says, John Faso may have made a shrewd political move by contributing to the fund drive, but I would guess there are more Teach Out supporters like myself who have been longtime supporters of WAMC. What can I say? And then Joseph says, Trump beat all Republicans by using the same tactics they used against Obama, and his behavior toward women is simply an extension of the party's subordination of women's right to fetuses and denial of medical privacy rights, and that's right.
All right, we're going to take a break. We're going to come back after the news. We have a lot of other stuff to discuss, most of it non-political, so we'll get to that next. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok, Teresa Bourgeois, and Libby Post making up the group. And we welcome your letters, roundtable at WAMC.org, roundtable at WAMC.org. We have more letters, and we'll get to those in a moment. But we have a couple of other items to discuss before we do that. The big business story that came out of this weekend is the deal between AT&T and Time Warner. By many measures, this should be a moment of great economic uncertainty for the corporate world. The United States election looms. Interest rates are set to rise soon. Britain plans to leave the EU. China's economic growth is slowing. Cyber attacks are on the rise, as we saw over the weekend. And Russia is flexing its military muscle in the Middle East. Any one of these factors would usually be enough to give chief executives pause. The men and women who run the world's largest corporations are nothing if not cautious. On Saturday night, AT&T said it planned to acquire Time Warner for $85.4 billion, the biggest deal of the year. On Friday, British American Tobacco offered $47 billion for a portion of Reynolds American that it does not already own. And this week, the chip maker Qualcomm is expected to make a $37 billion offer for the rival company NXP Semiconductors. Across industries, there are surprising signs of confidence with corporate chieftains and directors signaling their belief that the upswing will continue for months and even years to come. Investors are betting on sustained growth. Companies are hiring, and huge mergers and acquisitions are back in fashion, especially leading the way AT&T and Time Warner. $85.4 billion.
Chump change.
Man.
Not Trump change, but Chump change. That's the difference.
I keep thinking about reading Karl Marx back in, you know, political philosophy. And he predicted all of this, you know, that we eat our own, that, you know, that individuals get bigger and bigger, that the working class gets shoved out. Now, Marx is not the same thing as Soviet. I think we have to I think we have to remember that as a philosopher.
That's right.
But he was right.
Do you worry about the concentration of?
Yes, of course I do, because too big to fail is in play here too. You know, look, these guys—if they can afford all of that—think of just a little chump change, as I said before, to buy some lobbyists and to make it clear that if somebody wants to run for political office, the money will be there. You know, for them if they vote right. One of the great disgraces. Now, I have to confess that the Shartoks have a little tiny little B&B that we sometimes rent out, Airbnb. But I have to confess that, you know, nowhere have I seen more of an example of the power of the real estate lobby in New York State than when
and
Cuomo,
the hotel lobby.
Yeah, and that's real estate too. Yeah. I consider it all one and the same. Cuomo, you know, vetoing that bill. Why? To protect people's houses. Nah. Those hotel guys don't want anybody else renting rooms. It's really that simple. And that's why they were there. So we talk about the power of money in our lobbying process. It's extraordinary.
And what about the power to control messaging across all different platforms? Is that raised in this potential merger?
Well, I think that's the idea, right?
I mean, that's their goal, but what's the risk? That's the goal, but what's the risk?
Well, the other thing too is, and to that is you look at the. I find this interesting that this merger comes after the AOL deal fell through and was a disaster. So
that was early on.
Early on, and you try this. Right. So then you try it again with. So this was Time Warner going with AOL, and now Time Warner with going with AT&T. And I mean, to your point, Teresa, it does seem that I think this is a concern amongst many of us, although will it be a concern among regulators
It's the FCC who has to make this decision. Probably the Federal Trade Commission, too, would get involved. But the FCC, you know, the reason why you're not allowed to own a newspaper and or supposedly a newspaper and
with
a radio
lots
station
of exceptions,
and
you
a
say.
TV, yeah. You know, station in one market is so that you don't control all the message and you don't control what people hear and see in the news. And, you know, I don't know if the Comcast Universal merger has created a singular message across all of their platforms other than, you know, make money. That's their message. And so we'll see. I mean, I think Fox News, that is the example of corporate media takeover where the messaging is similar across all the channels.
Although if you watch the Fox movies.
Yeah, the movies are pretty good and the shows
pretty well leave them alone.
Yeah, and what I find interesting is for how right-wing Fox is, there are a lot of gay people who work for Fox News because, you know, friends of mine in the journalism world. And it's like, it's amazing to me, but I guess on the local levels, it's not as bad as it is in corporate.
Well, Libby,
it's an interesting thing for me.
We make all the excuses we want for our friends.
Oh, sure. Would they need to make a living?
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
I think back to the early, we'll go back to Trump here in this discussion.
May I interrupt?
Sorry.
No, just interrupt real quick and just say Donald Trump has denounced the acquisition, saying we'll look at breaking this deal up if we were president. I don't know how he would do that, but okay. And Tim Kaine said over the weekend on Meet the Press, less concentration, I think, is generally helpful, especially in the media.
I'm thinking about some articles I read, you know, Trump just unfettered access to CNN and during the primary, you know, just nonstop. And I think because he was making so much money for them. And I remember the comments were a couple of the journalists had said, we've lost control of our newsroom.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And I think about that when I think about this kind of concentration and the impact that that had, that he went unchecked for so long.
The media created his candidacy.
Yeah, but I think that's going to be right or left. If you have somebody who's going to sell tickets, they're going to sell the tickets.
But isn't it, if there was a Democrat that was saying and doing what Trump did, I would be equally appalled, you know, at
I agree with you, but I'm saying there's sort of no check on
him because it was lucrative for CNN. And do you see that as a problem in this concentrated? Mm. I don't know.
And as far as going down on a distracted path, Jason writes to us and says, Airbnb and cynical Cuomo move. You know, there are many people I know that can only afford to live now because they rent out an Airbnb room. Me and my partner were some of those whose job was lost. Jason Carey. I just wanted to say that.
And is the FCC, are these mechanisms strong enough now?
Wow.
To really, you know, determine whether or not
this is in the public interest, right?
Who's
on that board now? Is it all corporate interests or is it people who really believe in a free media? So it's, you know, I remember when Michael Powell, Colin Powell's son, was the head of the FCC under
right.
Bush, and he was the one who slapped CBS with the Janet Jackson, what they called Nipplegate, and it was just absurd, but let all these other mergers go through.
Well, I should have checked this. I don't know, but I know for a while there was a problem at the FCC because you couldn't get Obama appointees through, mm-hmm. and they didn't have enough people, and I'm not sure if that's still the case today, but and I think it raises a lot of questions.
Two quick things I want to get to. First of all, Tom Hayden passed away, 76 years old, passed away. Anybody want to comment about his legacy?
Well, he certainly was the leader in the anti-Vietnam, of the anti-Vietnam protests. And for that, he deserves a lot of question, because appreciation, because when you look back and see how the Vietnam, remember the whole theory where we had to go into Vietnam was the domino theory. They were all going to fall if we let Vietnam fall. That turns out not to be true. Vietnam has plenty of troubles with who? China,
right.
among others. So Hayden had it right. He was despised by many people, called unpatriotic and all the rest of it. But he held his own and he did very well.
You know, it's a shame. I mean, you know,
I see somebody who's 76 years old, I don't
know. Right. It's not.
Yeah.
A life well lived.
Right.
He's a life well lived.
Yes, he is. And I think it was unfair for him to get so slammed by the left in his later years because he was working within the system. And you know, that's what happens. It's called being a grown up.
So let's go to the Cubs.
All right.
Cubbies. Ooh,
yeah.
By the way, nice job talking about Tom Hayden without bringing up Jan Fonda. Okay.
I was going to do it.
You're the one who brought that up, honey, not
no,
us.
No, as I said, nice job. That was good.
Because every time we talk about Jerry Brown, I always say Linda Ronstadt, and everybody says that was a long time ago.
Yeah, right. Jerry Brown and Linda Ronstadt. Yeah. That's right.
Okay. So Saturday night was a very nice night for many of us who are Chicago Cubs fans. And for the first time since 1945, the Chicago Cubs have made it into the World Series. They will face the Cleveland Indians in The best of seven beginning tomorrow night, and it will I believe they begin in Cleveland, right?
Yeah, two games.
Mm-hmm. Two games in Cleveland, and then they'll move to Chicago. And just as I could not think of it being any sweeter than seeing that celebration in Chicago, I was glad they got into the series in Chicago because that city just erupted. And my God, even if they don't win, at least they'll have that moment.
They need to celebrate.
Something good for Chicago in tough times for Chicago.
Absolutely. And look, this one is hard for me too because Cleveland, obviously, you can make a case that Cleveland deserves it too, but there isn't that same curse and everything that
they don't deserve.
Well, I don't know if they don't deserve. I think they deserve it. And they have a good team, but
I think this shows Theo Epstein.
I was going to say that, too.
Okay. You know, he really knows what he's
American.
Doing.
He's a great American. It's true. Took the Bostons.
Right.
And now he takes the Chicago's.
Cubs. Right.
And he does
it's
all
great.
Of this thing. There isn't a more brilliant man in America. Too bad that Theo Epstein can't run for president.
Well, there's a great editorial.
What'd you say?
Why can't he?
Well, he could. Why would he? Yeah. He's making too much money doing what he's doing.
Good. Well,
but there's
Trump.
A great editorial cartoon where the devil is wrapped up. You know, two devils are wrapped up. And there's ice all over the place, as in hell has frozen over, and you know the Indians and Cubs are in the World Series, so hell has frozen over.
Well, and I was just going to say really quickly, my favorite Statler Brothers tune of all times is something. Well, I'll do this when I'll stop loving you when the lights come on at Wrigley Field.
Yeah.
So. Sorry. Do they play? They do play night games.
Oh yeah,
now, right.
Yeah,
okay.
They do. Yeah, that happens
Field
several.
It's a great baseball.
It's a
park.
Great American baseball park.
The way it should be.
Park.
It
That's
is a, absolutely.
It's a very
I mean,
uncomfortable park, but it's a lovely.
We
beautiful
were there,
park.
And well,
it depends
you know,
on your size. For the, you, maybe
no,
uncomfortable.
It's regard, no. It has nothing to do with size. It's the way the seats are configured. So often, if you're sitting, you're looking out. But who cares? You're in Wrigley.
But we went to a game.
Yeah,
we went to a game and we were. You know, on the first base line, but beyond the first base line, and the bullpen was like right there. It's right on the field. Yeah.
Baseball
you know, it's
is
great.
TV.
Yeah.
Did
yeah.
you ever look under the seats at Wrigley Field?
No, I've only been there once.
Oh. Do you ever look under the seats at Wrigley Field?
Full of gum.
I don't know what.
There
you're
you getting. Go, Libby. You're good.
Full of gum.
Wrigley.
Oh yeah,
it's
Wrigley.
Right.
Yeah,
it's the Wrigley. Right.
Oh, my God.
And I want to point something else out.
Yes.
Joe said 1945. And the advantage I have over all of you is I happened to be around in 1945.
For how many years?
Four.
Ah, okay.
But the rest of you had not.
Well,
so that makes you inferior in every way.
Well, my dad signed with the Cubs.
I know that. I
my
heard
dad
that.
Signed with the Cubs, and he played in the Cubs minor league.
Does that make us inferior in every way?
Yes.
It certainly does.
So,
that's what we.
So
call,
you might have been alive, but my dad signed with the Cubs.
That's what we call relative importance.
And when I moved to Chicago in 1985, and I said I have to live in walking distance of Wrigley Field, which I did.
Boy.
And took in as many games as I possibly could. So this is such an exciting year.
As opposed to Ebbets Field, where they were disgusting and. Took down.
It's just a beautiful park.
Wrong thing to do.
And so for me.
In a neighborhood. I mean, it's a neighborhood ballpark.
It's a neighborhood ballpark where people stand on the rooftops of houses to watch the game.
It's
and,
great.
You know, where you can just go get stadium tickets. Yeah. It's a real, it's baseball as it should be, and it's just incredibly exciting.
Well, and I can't stop thinking also that it is delightful that we have something. In these last 2 weeks,
that's right.
To divert our attention away from
it was
the election,
when the Olympics was on,
right.
It was great.
You think
it's
a plug?
No. Well, this has been planned for forever.
Yes.
But
it's always time.
Well, the
but
thing I remember when the World Series was in September. That's why they were called Mr. September. Now it's going to...
Mr. October. No, it was Mr. October, but it was early.
It was early. It's going to be in November by the time this is all
well,
done.
Well, depending on... They're going to sweep in four games, so it'll be all right.
Oh,
that's
okay,
right.
Fine.
That's right. So all I've got to say is we're going to have a woman president, and the Chicago Cubs are going to win the World Series in the same year.
It's amazing,
year. I mean,
isn't
I just,
it?
I'm in heaven. But the other, a little trivia about Theo Epstein. Did you know that his grandfather wrote Casablanca?
No.
I had
really?
Heard that, but I had completely forgotten about that.
I had no idea. His grandfather, His grandfather.
Best movie ever made.
His grandfather was a scriptwriter.
We're just controlling everything. Baseball, Hollywood. It's just the way it is.
And you stop that.
Yep. All right. We'll end there on that note. And we'll be back tomorrow for another round of our roundtable panel.